Laughter. Happy New Year, everybody. I'm so glad to be speaking with you in 2015. You know, I've reflected on this some, and I think that having a more playful, yes, prosperous, and balanced life in this year may add up to a more meaningful life. And for a more meaningful life, becoming an erotic virtuoso would add so much. What an admirable goal. And I have two guests who will explain more, Sherry Winston and Carl Frankel. And they've both been on this show before last year. And I'm so happy to have you back. Welcome, Sherry and Carl.
Hi, Diana. It's lovely to be back.
Hi, Diana.
Hi, Carl. Hi, Sherry. Yes, well, let me just give you a little bit of background. Sherry is a celebrated holistic sexuality teacher, and she's the author of national award-winning Women's Anatomy of Sexual Arousal, Secret Maps to Buried Treasure, and more recently, Succulent Sexcraft, Your Hands-on Guide to Erotic Play and Practice. And Carl is the author of Secrets of Sex Masters, which brings together the wisdom of some of the world's best sex teachers, and Love and the More Perfect Union, Six Keys to Relationship Bliss. So we've got two real experts who will help us a lot with this whole idea of becoming an erotic virtuoso. And you have a workshop coming up. I'd love for you to tell the listeners about it, and we'll give the website so that they can learn even more. So tell us about becoming an erotic virtuoso, whoever wants to start. How about you, Sherry?
I will start. So we're doing a two-day intensive becoming an erotic virtuoso in-person workshop. It's in Kingston, New York, which is in the Hudson River Valley. And it's Valentine's Day weekend, so it's February 14th and 15th. And I think what might be unusual about what we're doing, well, it's probably a lot of things that are unusual about it, but one thing is it's for people who are single and for people who are partnered. So
I'm so glad you're including the people who are single, because a lot of these folks need a little more confidence.
Yeah, and, you know, Valentine's Day can always be a difficult day to be single.
Yes.
And, you know, if you're single, this is a intensive for everybody learning how to be a fabulous lover to yourself mm-hmm. and to your partners if and when you have them. So that's one of the things I'm really enjoying, is that this particular two-day intensive is going to be great for whether you want to have a romantic weekend with your partner, whether you're single. Hey, if you're in a triad, you can come. It's really, you know, for whatever your relationship status is. So that's one of the things that we're very excited about being able to do in this intensive.
And one of the great things is that singles get to be in community here. It might be a lonesome time for them on their own, but here they're in a learning journey with a bunch of colleagues in community, and about half the people who signed up so far are singles, which actually surprised me because I expected them to be shy about it, but they are coming out for it, so it's good.
And I know in our listening audience, which is worldwide actually, so that probably some of the people in China, for example, won't be able to come to New York for your workshop, but they can find out more about it by, now tell me if this is correct, info@intimateartscenter.com.
Well, that's one. They can certainly write there, and that will actually come to me, and I will answer. But
okay.
They can also go to our website, which is intimateartscenter.com, and they will see on the homepage a graphic that talks about this event, and they can click on that, and it will take them to the page where they can learn lots about it. So either way is fine. And people here, Internet Art Center, no. Intimate, like being intimate.
I'm sorry, did I say internet?
No, but people hear it because I say it all the time. So I just want to be clear, intimateartscenter.com.
Yes, intimate. And what most of us are striving for is more emotional intimacy and physical intimacy. So intimate, Well, I think it's a wonderful word, and you break it down, and it can be into me you see.
Mm. There you go.
Yeah.
So you write in your recent email about this, what's sexy, fun, and something you'll remember forever, and you answer about your two-day intensive becoming an erotic virtuoso. How might that make a difference for people, becoming an erotic virtuoso?
Sure, go for it.
Sure.
You know, it's a big question, and we're going to break it down over the course of this interview, but...
Well, here we are. We got born, we got incarnated, we've got these bodies and this spirit and this psyche, and we get to go around in this package one time, as far as I know. We might get to go around another time in another package, but as far as I know, this is the only time we get to go in this one. And I believe that pleasure and access to our ecstatic potential is our birthright. And I think for most of us, we've gotten separated from that through, you know, what has happened to us, the course of our lives, what we've learned and not learned. And so, I'm sorry, we have a cat in front of us that's just hysterically got her head caught in a basket.
I think she's trying to get attention.
Anyway, so we sort of got distracted.
Well, maybe you need to release her.
Yes, Carl just did.
Okay.
Sorry for laughing. Anyway, so...
That's her bid for attention.
Oh, absolutely. They're like kids. They know when you're on the phone.
Yes,
anyway, so
that's very true, yes.
Right. So this is really work about connecting to our potential and living a life that's as full of pleasure and joy and connection with ourselves and the ability to connect with others as it could possibly be. So that's our intention, and that's why it's transformational work.
It is.
Yeah, I'd also say that it's a practice. You know, anytime you want to pursue excellence at anything, whether it's virtuosity or something less, it's about attention and presence and being focused and screwing up and returning and breathing and all that kind of thing. It's across the board. So this is actually a practice. It's a way to develop expertise. And the only point I'd make is I don't think there's a more fun practice than trying to develop excellence at sensual and sexual stuff, because it's so powerful and so much fun and potentially so ecstatic. But it's no different from sitting meditation, except you're doing it with yourself or somebody else, and it's around pleasure and sensation.
Well, and indeed, you can, and I know, Sherry, you talk about this in your book, and it's about the ability to be in kind of a trance, whether it's a solo trance or a conjoined trance. So it goes beyond meditation and to a rather ecstatic sexual state.
The thing is, we are in different states of consciousness all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if I'm driving my car on a highway, I go into a little driving trance. You know, if you're sitting daydreaming, you're going into a little trance. We trance out at different levels all the time. When we do a sitting meditation practice, we're trying to go, at least we may or may not succeed, but we're trying to go into a trance where we're being mindful and present. And there's lots of ways to do that. And in fact, they're all the similar tools that we use to do those different things. And the same with arousal. It's a specific kind of trance state, and we can learn how to enhance that and go there more easily and more deeply. And it's not really that hard, because these are things we already use all the time, like attention and awareness and breathing and touch. So it's just about taking those tools we already have and using them consciously.
So in your two-day workshop, I really like it that you are focusing in on energy and autonomy. And you say, what an amazing combination. And yes, and so secrets of the sexual body. And Sherry, you are a real expert on the sexual body. Explain your background to the listening audience. I know we did this last fall, but people maybe weren't listening or haven't listened to the archived version. So what makes you especially an expert on the sexual body?
Well, I'll just clarify. It's about our focus is anatomy and the physical body and the energy.
Right.
So my background is that I spent 25 years predominantly in the world of birth. I'm a certified nurse midwife, gynecology practitioner, registered nurse, childbirth educator, massage therapist, and I was very, very focused on really predominantly helping women birth as well as gynecology and women's health issues. Mm-hmm. So that was my background, and I actually started to realize that what I was teaching women to help them go into labor, which is another trance state, and have wonderful births, I was unconsciously using in my own sex life. So learning how to use intention and awareness and breathing and sound and touch. And when I became conscious of that, I started studying sexuality on purpose, modern sexuality and, you know, Tantra and Taoist and Native American traditions. But at that point, I was doing it for my own sexual edification, although it actually spilled into my midwifery practice and helped me be a better midwife.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I retired from being a midwife, I transitioned into becoming a sexuality teacher. And in fact, all the stuff I learned as a midwife, I then could use to help people have better sex. So it's all connected. But that's how I 15 years ago now transitioned into being a sex teacher.
And I got to meet you and became aware of you last June when you presented at the ASECT conference in Monterey, California. ASECT is American Association for Sex Educators, Counselors, and Therapists. And yours was a very original conference or presentation. And in fact, there was standing room only. We didn't have a big enough room for you. Because people are not, there are lots of sex therapists and even sex educators who don't have the information that you have.
Well, you know, it's a funny thing. I went to school for a lot of years to get all those initials after my name, and
yes,
you had asked me when I finished school at that point. You know, I had an advanced degree and all these other initials. If you'd asked me, I would have said, I know my way around female anatomy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's true for medical professionals, sexuality
mm-hmm.
educators, therapists, and the educated public. You know, people, we've picked up copies of our bodies ourselves. We've looked, we've studied, and we think we know. So I have to tell you, I was actually shocked when I started to discover that the mental model that we are all working with is incomplete and leaves out really important parts of the female genital anatomy. And when I discovered that, I started what I call the hunt for buried pleasure.
Buried pleasure, I love that, yes.
Right, so women's anatomy of arousal, the hunt for buried pleasure, is what I discovered over a decade or more of doing research and experiential research and figuring out what women really have, what's been left out of the map, how it's all connected, how it works together. And so what I'm teaching is actually unique. I don't know anyone else who's put together the map the way I have, and I personally am on a mission to get this information out. I don't want it to be information that only I and the people who've read my books or come to my workshops get. I want this to be information that everybody has.
Well,
one of the things,
you're doing a good job. Carl, let me just promote her book here, and then
please,
I really want
to
hear from you.
I was going to do my own promotion. You go first.
Yeah,
I'll
okay.
Go second.
So Sherry has put this all together very nicely in Succulent Sex Craft, your hands-on guide to erotic play and practice for men and women, singles and partners. And she breaks it down beautifully with some amazing illustrations of her own because she went to art school, and also some very erotic and sometimes famous drawings and art from over the last few hundred years. So it's a great book visually and in terms of what she suggests. And for instance, in Conjoined Trance, this is on page 187, when we're pleasuring our partner, we're pleasuring our own self equally. The line between giving and receiving vanishes. You get as turned on by doing as being done. That, and you say you've got to love those mirror neurons, and I think we could talk a little bit about that, and perhaps we will. But yeah, this conjoined trance, it's pretty amazing.
And you can get in the zone. You know, there's this expression, in the zone, which applies
right.
to lots of things, tennis, whatever, dancing.
Yeah.
It's true in the bedroom, too. You know, you can fumble around, for starters, and the trance state is when you kind of want to get into a groove where you're really present to your own body and what's going on. When that happens with your partner, too, and it becomes conjoined, it's like both of you are swimming in the same water, and you're very intuitive, and because you're in the zone, and that's why it's like an altered state. But I think when you're in the zone, you are truly present in a kind of magical way. And that's true no matter what you're in the zone for. And that's what happens. That's what the magic and mystery of a conjoined trance is about, ultimately.
Mm. Wow. And
you know, and I think we have this sort of, from movies and books, we have this idea that sex, partner sex, is this magical experience where everything just happens and nobody has to talk or communicate and everybody has orgasms and it's just fabulous. And that can happen spontaneously for people. But for most people, that's not our experience of partner sex most of the time. Usually we have to communicate with our partners. Sometimes things don't go well. Sometimes we fumble. We get self-conscious. We get anxious. All kinds of things happen. But that conjoined trance that you were talking about, referring to from my book, that's sort of like an advanced practice, a place that we can get more skilled so we can go there more often and more easily. And that's a learnable skill. So that magical, it's amazing and everything is just happening perfectly thing can actually happen, and we can do things to make it happen more often. We can't make it happen. We can't control it, but we can create a setting and habits and learn skills where we can make it much more likely to happen.
Yeah,
you know, I don't use the term foreplay because foreplay is very goal-directed. We want to get somewhere, probably to an orgasm, so it's very like we'll get there as fast as we can. And instead we use the term warm-up because what we're really doing is trying to sort of get in a groove so that we can start to dance beautifully and hopefully get to a conjoined trance together. But warm-up sort of takes the heat off. It's not like you're doing something to the other person. You're doing something to yourself and your partner at the same time.
I like that. And then that takes away the idea that sex has to have a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Yep. And it's just, if you go jogging, you stretch. I keep using other analogies. If you want to have a fabulous sex session, you get into the water. You warm up. You go forward and you find out what your body's feeling and wanting. You find out what your partner's body is feeling and wanting, and you get into a groove together.
Get into a groove. And you two are partners in business and in life and in pleasure. And my partner, my fiance, Brian, and I have developed 7 rules for sensational sex. And I'm going to share them now. They're very brief, but I'd be interested in your reaction. And because this is part of what makes all of this more conscious. So 1 is take care of yourself. 2, communicate openly and directly. 3, focus on your partner or partner's pleasure. And 4 is respect boundaries. And I've got fire engines in the background because I live up the street.
That's a weird statue of fire engines, you know?
Yeah, I know. So we're getting fire engine roar sirens to sound effects for this. Uh-huh. So respect boundaries. 5, don't
Things
take
are
any...
getting hotter. What can I say?
Yeah, hotter. That's right. 5, don't take anything personally. 6, express gratitude. And 7, let go. You know, I know that many of the clients that I see have trouble with a number of these things. Express gratitude is really important, the last, 6 on the list. because I think a lot of relationships die from emotional undernourishment. They stop saying what they value and appreciate about the other.
I think that's very wise, Diana. Mm-hmm. And it's also about, I would expand it to say, be not only appreciative, grateful, but positive, because we tend to sort of live in negative space and project that stuff onto our partner. And that's just a downer. It's hard to be sexy. It's hard to have fun if you're doing that. So I would add to your list, which is a wonderful one, practice positivity, too.
I like it. Practice positivity. Sherry, do you have anything to add?
Well, I love your list. I think it's fabulous. And I think it actually, a number of those things speak to a lot of the myths that limit people's sexual pleasure, like this idea that there's a goal. And I love your number 7, which is let go.
I work with so many women who have trouble with orgasms. Mm-hmm. And of course, the secret there is to let go, to surrender, to be in the moment. And it's pretty hard to get to really powerful orgasms if you haven't done that.
It is indeed, and yet our cultural model of sex is so goal-oriented and goal-driven and has such a limited idea. And so I miss so many. And I just also, the communication piece, I mean, I really think that's a great list. I mean, it really covers the bases, the communication piece. Number one, I mean, I'm always talking about, it starts with your relationship with yourself. All of this does.
Yeah, take care of yourself.
That's number one on my list. Also,
yeah.
It's one of the great challenges with a relationship, isn't it? How we take care of ourselves and be there to help take care of our partner and what that balance is. It's easy to go, you know, too far either way, to not take care of ourselves if we're taking care of someone else, or the opposite, to, you know, be so focused on ourselves we forget that we want to take care of another person. So it's, you know, that balance, how we start with being centered in ourselves and then move into attending to our partner, respecting boundaries, communicating, all that stuff. So I thought that's a great list. Thanks for sharing that.
Thank you. I'll share with Brian. He might be listening. He sometimes does. That you like it. Yeah, I like it too, and it certainly makes for a hotter sex life and conjoined trances and all of that.
You know, I'll just add one more thing. Carla,
yes,
and I,
please.
We play games. We come up with these like games or intentions or things, and one of the ones we've been playing with for the last couple of days, we're calling it the gratitude game. And the gratitude game, and we've tried different versions of it. The one we're just working with is to say thank you, to express gratitude. But if at any time you're feeling underappreciated, or you're feeling like your partner didn't say thank you, or instead of complaining about it and going, you know, you should have thanked me for washing all these dishes.
Uh-huh.
So no complaining, no negative. But when we're feeling like we want to be thanked, thank the other person for something.
Yes, and Carl, weren't you the one who said when you appeared on my show as a single guest, I mean as an only guest, that sometimes it's more appropriate to say thank you rather than I love you?
I'm not sure I said it. It's a great line, and I think.
Okay, well then I'm confusing it.
Pathway, sure. Yeah, I said it.
Okay, you'll take it.
That was good. Yeah, I said it.
All right. Well, because
I think what happens so often in relationships is that familiarity and the desire for autonomy just sort of suppresses the desire to say yes to the other person. And that yes, you just can't actually give enough of it, I don't think. And yes takes a lot of different forms: appreciation, gratitude, admiration, flirtation, right? You're sexually, yes. So there are all kinds of ways to express it. And I think relationships tend to have an impulse towards entropy, so it's really great to counter it with all these positive communications.
Yeah, oh, that's a very good point. The it's sort of the impulse for entropy. And people that are depressed, I imagine, do that even more. They just go within there, and they're not enough going outward, but perhaps you can expand on that a little.
Well, I think that I think there is a tendency, just familiarity and routine creates a sense of been here, done this, and it's not novel and exciting. And so to really be present and engaged and alive, Sherry and I find it useful to sort of play games, but it's a kind of a formal sense as well as just having fun. It's like, let's have this today being a living lab to see how positive a relationship we can co-create today and how much we can override the natural relationship impulse towards entropy. So it's, we gamify, we make games out of each day to see if we can sort of win against the forces of decline and decay, right?
Wow.
No, but and just to be real
about it. That's
good.
I like that a lot.
You know,
go ahead,
and just
Sherry.
To be real about it, we don't succeed all the time, and we forget.
Yes, we do.
Uh-huh.
Right? I mean, it's not like we're perfect and we have it all together. It's really an ongoing process, and sometimes at the end of the day, we'll be like, "Oops, we totally forgot we were playing the appreciation game today," or "Okay, we'll try again tomorrow." And so I think it's also important to not sort of hold up some sort of unrealistic expectation we're going to constantly be making it fun and exciting. Sometimes it's just the reality. You're with another person a lot. It can get routine or boring or unexciting. And so I think it's important not to have unrealistic expectations. At the same time, we can go, and what can we do to liven it up? What can we do to ignite things? So
to your workshop, you will address these things, becoming an erotic virtuoso, through your energy and anatomy, your secrets of the sexual body, and of course we've been talking some about that, and secrets of sexual energy, and after the break, which will be in a few minutes, we'll get into that a little bit more. But you will just talk about how you will structure this, because it's a smallish group,
mm-hmm.
and... Yes, just talk about what you will do in the group in terms of embodied experiences and your using your, as you put it, your inner sex craft tools.
Well, for one thing, it is going to be a small group, and I think that is important because it's about creating a safe community where people feel comfortable to explore and have fun. I also want to be really clear, there's not any actual sex or nudity that's going to happen.
Yes. Yeah, that's
the work
good that you say
sessions.
That. Right.
Mm-hmm. It will be a weaving. There'll be talking, there'll be illustrated lecture, there'll be discussion, and there'll be embodied experiences. So we might be doing something where everybody is closing their eyes, breathing, making sound, playing with visions, internal visions of energy movement. We'll do some partnered exercises where we're just learning how to practice communication skills, awareness skills. So there'll be lots of different things. And like I said, it'll be this weaving of things. So we'll do some talking, but not too much. We'll do some playing with embodied experience. Then we'll do sharing. So that's kind of the general flow of how it will go over the 2 days. And partly it will be co-created by the people who attend.
Of
so,
course.
We're going to be, because we're keeping the group really small, it's one of the, I actually really like this size of a group because everybody can participate. Nobody's going to get lost. It's not such a big group where people can kind of just like vanish or disappear. It's really going to be a small community that we'll create. Did you want to add something, Carl?
Well, we'll probably, when we say small, it's not clear what that means. So it's probably 20 or so maximum,
yeah.
which is a small group. And I would also add, just as we go into close, another thing that I think is special about it is that Sherry and I are co-teaching it, and we are life partners, and there are not many people who are doing this work who are doing it as a couple. And I think, and when we've done this before, people have said it adds value, not only having a male and female perspective, but having a couple who's kind of been through the ropes and is dealing with a lot of the stuff that's up between themselves and in their own lives.
Absolutely. You present a really positive model for everybody, because you have learned to overcome a lot of the possible difficulties, and I like your appreciation game or whatever. But you've done the work, and so now you can share. Plus, you've written all these books, so you can share your expertise and share the wealth. And I think it's great that you do that. And when we come back from the break, we'll get into a little more of the specifics about the workshop the secrets of the sexual body. I was thinking we'd like to tell people about genital anatomy, and we've already talked a little bit about breath and sound, but perhaps expand on that, intention, imagination, and then the secrets of sexual energy. You talk about energy polarity, mirror neurons. We touched on that at the beginning, but I want to expand on that a little bit more. Enhancing erotic awareness. And so we have still lots to talk about. And so we will right after the break. So please stay with us. We're back. This is Dr. Hi. Diana Wiley. And I'm here with Sherry Winston, the author of Succulent Sex Craft, Your Hands-On Guide to Erotic Play and Practice, and Carl Frankel, Secrets of the Sex Masters. They both have other books, but those are key books for this discussion. And Sherry, I teased the audience a little bit before the break about talking about secrets of the sexual body, genital anatomy, and I'm remembering the ASEC conference. You had a wonderful slide presentation, and I think so many of the sex educators and the sex therapists were especially enthralled and enlightened by, well, you have some drawings in your book, but the vestibular bulbs and when they're aroused. And tell us more about vestibular bulbs.
I would be so delighted to. As I was saying before, there are parts of female genital anatomy that I wasn't aware of. And the first part that I discovered that I had not heard of in all of my studies was the vestibular bulbs. And they are part of what I call the female erectile network, which is a network of structures that women have that are all made out of erectile tissue, which is, as we know from penile experience, as we know from penises, has the ability to fill with blood and get big and hard. Engorged is what it's called. So women have just as much of that wonderful engorgeable erectile tissue. And, of course, we all already know about the head of the clitoris. The clitoris has more parts than that. It has three parts as well. But the vestibular bulbs are just one of the key parts of that erectile network. So they are two big wads of erectile tissue. You can think of them as being shaped somewhat like an upside-down comma. There's one on either side of the vaginal opening, and that's the sort of the fat, bulby part at the bottom. And then they go up along the sides. They get thinner, and the top attaches to the shaft of the clitoris, which is the second part of the clitoral structures. And the thing about the bulbs is their location. They're underneath the labia on either side of the vaginal opening. And what I finally figured out, and here's the thing about understanding the anatomy, and I get this a lot when I teach this material, and I've been teaching it for 15 years to professionals and lay audiences, is there's a lot of moments where women go, oh, I get it. That's why that happens. And that was my experience with the bulbs. So the bulbs, when they're big and puffy, and engorged, then when something is moving in and out of the vagina, it feels pretty wonderful. Yeah. When the bulbs are not engorged and there's something moving in and out of the vagina, it's kind of, you know, it could be nice, but it's not fabulous. And so for me, the understanding about the bulbs was kind of like, oh, that makes so much sense, because I'll tell you, when I first started having partner sex, I thought there was something wrong with me because I didn't have orgasms with intercourse. Mm-hmm. Now, we know, you know, I know, and probably many of your listeners understand that that's actually quite common. More than half of women do not have orgasms with intercourse. And I remember thinking that Mother Nature put my clitoris in the wrong place.
Why did
she put it way up there? Yeah. Why isn't it lower down where the action is taking place? And I was very, right, confused by that.
Uh-huh.
But now I understand that because I didn't know I had vestibular bulbs, my partners didn't know, nobody was playing with them, they weren't getting big and puffy, and so it made intercourse, it was nice, but it wasn't fabulous. And so that's really part of the, one of those moments when you realize, oh, that's why... for women, for example, you know that experience where if you're sort of riding someone's thigh, you know, somebody has their whole thigh pressed up against your whole vulva, and how good that feels, you can kind of rock and your vulva gets nice and big and puffy. And I remember as a teenager having that experience and it felt really great. But then once the clothes went flying and we moved on to other activities, my arousal would drop. And now I understand the reason that feels so good, that big, diffuse pressure on the whole vulva, is because it was the bulbs that were getting big and puffy.
So what can a woman do?
And that once we stopped having any kind of stimulation of that, then my arousal would drop. And I didn't understand it then, but once you know what's there, then suddenly you're like, oh, okay, I get it. Before there's any penetration, it's really important, among other things, that the bulbs are puffed up. Carl is dying to say something here.
Yes,
I just want to say that puffy vestibular bulbs are good for the guy, too.
Right.
Let us not forget that.
It's good for the guy, too, because he's got this aroused, turned-on, enthusiastic partner, and that's what men want. They want an enthusiastic partner.
That's part of it. And
that's
I was
an important part, but that wasn't what he was going
for. And I was being more literal.
Yes.
I am inside someone who's puffy at that. It is a great, tight, blood pressure cuff-like fit. It's a spectacular feeling. Look, it's always good, right? But it's also a lot better for the guy when the balls are puffy.
Right. So it's good for the goose and good for the gander.
Oh, yeah.
In all the ways.
All right.
In all the ways.
Can a woman, during penetration even, she can touch her labia, her vulva, which can influence those vestibular bulbs, or the man during cunnilingus can kind of pay attention to her labia and get them more aroused, and maybe you have some other ideas around this or getting those vestibular bulbs filled up and more aroused.
Well, I think one thing that's, first of all, to know where they are and that they exist.
Yeah, and by the way, you have a great drawing
is pretty mind-boggling. Because once you know, then you can find all kinds of delightful ways to play with them.
Mm-hmm.
You can play with them, more externally. You can play with stroking the whole vulva. You can do the, whole thigh pressed against the vulva. You can be licking the clitoris and using, your fingers to play with the bulb. So there's lots and lots of fun ways to play with them once you know they exist. I think that's really one of the keys. And the other thing I would add is that there are additional structures in the erectile network, and that when you get all of those structures engorged, then you get this circuit of erectile tissue. And so one of the things that we're missing is this idea that there are these structures, and so a lot of times we're just paying attention to the head of the clitoris. And the head of the clitoris is a fine thing to pay attention to. I'm not...
Right.
We shouldn't. But if you don't get the whole network engorged, you're not getting that cuff. You're not getting the connections. So when everything is engorged and you're playing with the bulbs and you had attention to the clitoris, then when you're playing with the bulbs, you're also indirectly stimulating the clitoral structures. So it's, but if the bulbs aren't puffed up, you don't get that indirect stimulation. So it's an important thing to really know what's really there so you can attend to it properly.
And you've got a great drawing. You have lots of really informative and lovely drawings reflecting your art school and your knowledge of anatomy. But on page 124 in your book, Succulent Sex Craft, you've got a nice drawing of the vestibular bulbs and the legs that come down from the clitoral shaft that look kind of like a wishbone.
Yeah.
And the urethral sponge and all of these as you put it, the network, the whole network, and getting that in play will increase a woman's chances for orgasms, and I'm going to say plural.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So all of that is really good. Carl, is there anything else you want to talk about?
Yeah, I did want to say quickly, the best review I've seen of Sherry's book, Women's Anatomy of Arousal, and on Amazon, it has 105 reviews. It's been around for a while. It's got really very positive reviews. But one was just posted, and it was a four-word review from a woman who said, "I had no idea." That was the review.
Oh, wow.
Really true. People just had
absolutely.
No idea.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I can tell you as a sex therapist, a big part of my work is sex education for so many people.
Mm-hmm.
They just need more sex education. They need the therapy too, but first they need to understand a little bit more. And Sherry, I have recommended your book and talked about these vestibular bulbs, and I think you used the term, if not, maybe I made it up, but soon after the conference, I shared with Brian, my fiancé, that munching on the labia can be very arousing. Just a little gentle munching.
Mm-hmm. A little gentle munching.
Yeah.
I think that's a movie I saw in 2012.
What's that? What did you say, Carl?
I think it's a movie I saw in 2012, A Little Gentle Munching. I can't remember who was in it right now.
Well, I've been doing this work going on now 33 years, and I continue to learn, and I certainly have learned from you, Sherry, and Carl. I mean, fortunately, I have you back on the show very soon. But, we continue to learn, and the more knowledge we have about sexuality, the better our sex lives will be.
It's so true, and one of the challenges about sexuality in our culture is this idea that people have that it's sort of you got what you got and it's mm-hmm. natural, and so why would you need to go to a class or read a book? And there mm-hmm. is a whole segment of the population that just has this idea that, you know, if sex is natural, I should need to learn about it. And really it's not true. It's like learning how to play a musical instrument. We all have a natural ability to make music and to love music, but whether we learn to play the piano or not is up to us. And sex is just like that. We can learn to become skilled at it. We can learn how to enhance it. And I really encourage people to have that perspective that the more we learn, the better it can get. And I know that you know that because you've been in this field for so long, but so many people really just don't get that very basic idea that, hey, if you want to learn to play tennis, you take tennis lessons. If you want to learn to speak French, you go to French class. If you want to learn to have mind-blowing orgasms and be an erotic virtuoso,
you come to our intensive.
Right? You read our books, you go to our intensive. You learn, you study with other wonderful teachers that are out there, and you can become incredibly skilled in this area. And I think that's so important for people to know.
I do too, and that's why I'm having you on the program today. Because I'm in my fifth year now with Progressive Radio Network. I'm very grateful for the show because one of the best ways to get out good solid information is through the media, whether mm-hmm. it's workshops or radio or television, because it's very much needed. So can we move into mirror neurons?
Sure.
We can, but I just want to say I really appreciate
yes.
your show because people, accurate information, one of the great challenges now with the Internet is there is a lot of information out there, and so much of it is bad. Right.
It's inaccurate.
And it's hard for people to know when they're getting useful and accurate information or they're getting cultural myths repackaged or if they're just getting crap. So I really appreciate your show because I know that you're giving people accurate, useful information. So I have to throw that appreciation in there for you.
Well, thank you, Sherry. And that's why I hope to continue this show if all goes well. So mirror neurons, as I understand it, they reflect back an action we observe. And so it makes us mimic that action or have the impulse to do so. So mirror neurons make emotions contagious. They let the
even
feelings...
beyond that, we actually have the feeling, the sensation, the experience as if something was happening to us. It's why when you see somebody get hit on the thumb with a hammer, you wince.
Right.
So it's one of the ways we learn. So it's what children do when they're doing imitative learning, but it's also the root of empathy and why we actually can experience what somebody else is experiencing.
Yeah, and you write in your book, Sherry, when your heart is open and loving, you're bathing yourself in a healthy, feel-good chemical soup. I love that. And anyone nearby shares in your positive alchemical broth.
Well,
and that's part of these mirror neurons, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, there's so much we still don't know about the body and the connection between the mind-body. But some of the things we do know is that our state of consciousness is a field that literally gets transmitted to people who are 6 feet or so away from us. So that's one of the reasons why emotions are literally contagious. Not only that, but our heart is also an energy field generator and a much more powerful generator even than our brains are. Mm. And that's, again, why when we're feeling loving and open-hearted, other people can literally feel that. They will resonate with that. And it's one of the things that humans do with each other. We bioregulate each other. Mm-hmm. And so we can think of the mama and baby as the most foundational unit of that, but you know, if you have an upset baby in your arms, one of the ways to calm them down is to calm yourself down.
Absolutely. And that's something that David Snarch, and you probably know his name, he talks a lot about differentiation and hugging until relaxed. And part of this is being able to calm yourself down, way down. So you take responsibility for your own sort of difficult emotions. But your example of the mother and baby are so true, are so very true. And did I discuss this with you or with somebody else, but it's about the still face, the mother.
You and I talked about it.
Good. So, Carl, talk about the still face, because it's a pretty good example of mirror neurons and babies and mothers.
It was an experiment, I think it was done in the 80s or something like that. A guy named Tronick had a mother, perfectly normal, loving mother, interact with her infant baby, and they interacted normally, and then there came a time where she turned away 180 degrees, and when she turned back, she just gave the baby nothing. She didn't smile. She didn't giggle. She didn't make faces. Didn't make go-go-go. She was just impassive. And it took about 60 seconds for the baby to dissolve from a happy, playful, normal baby to a hysterically upset child. And, in fact, they terminated the research because it was so traumatic for the children. And I haven't really thought about the sort of scientific explanation, but it has to do with no mirror neurons firing and the dyad, that wonderful dyad, just being terminated, and all of a sudden that child was all alone and waiting for the saber-toothed tiger to come eat it, basically.
Mm. Yes, it's a power of, and you can see it on a YouTube, can't you?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And people need to plug in, what, still face, baby experiment,
project,
or something like that? Yeah.
And the other thing I wanted to say is that we've sort of touched on two subjects here. We've been talking about anatomy, and now we're talking about energy. And it's not a coincidence that this is the 2 days on our workshop. And I'm not trying to promote the workshop so much as saying these are the sort of 2 essentials about becoming an erotic virtuoso, knowing the physical reality of what you're working with and learning to be present to and sensitive to and work with your own energy and that of your partner, which is always there, and sometimes we're more able to apprehend it and sometimes less.
So that we're back to one of, my 7 rules. The first one is, and you agreed with it, take care of yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because if you're feeling positive and happy and not angry, you're much more likely to be, well, for starters, an enthusiastic partner.
Absolutely.
And a responsive partner.
And our energy field and our touch all transmit those, you know, whether we're feeling loving and open-hearted, whether we're pissed off or resentful. And when we're in the, you know, an angry or resentful place, it not only blocks our energy and closes our heart and does some of what we're just talking about with that still face experiment, you know, gives our partner this message of negativity, and we pick up on that. And in so many ways, when we learn to manage our own energy, we can develop mastery of knowing, like, okay, I'm upset. I'm going to calm myself down. I'm going to breathe. I'm going to make sound. I'm going to meditate. I'm going to say I love you mantras, whatever it is we need to do to shift our heart back into an open, loving place. And again, these are skill sets, and starts with ourselves, and then it's about our connection with everyone. It's not even just about our lovers. It's about our children, our friends, our coworkers. You know, what is the energy field that we're creating all the time as we move through the world?
Yep.
And I think the production of oxytocin, which, as I understand it, is a positive feedback loop, because the more we're touched, the more we want to be touched, and the more we touch again. And that can not only make us better partners, but better parents when we're kind of awash in oxytocin, and better grandparents.
Oxytocin's like the love hormone.
The cuddle chemical.
Yeah, and the more there is, the more we get, the more we get, the more we give, the more we get in that wonderful cycle, you know, and our pets also. We were talking about this today with some of you, people with pets live 7 years longer than people without pets.
And that's because their cats are and dogs are oxytocin generators.
Basically, right?
Yes, yeah. And that's why people who've had surgery who have a pet recover faster.
Yep.
Because they get to pet the pet.
That's why we call them our pets. I mean, that's one of their essential functions, because things that create oxytocin, are touch and energy field, and you know, the peak oxytocin times in our lives, orgasms are peak oxytocin times, and for women who have ecstatic or just even primal births are having peak oxytocin, like lifetime peak oxytocin.
I would
add to that a breastfeeding mother. I breastfed both of my kids for a year, and and I know from also my reading, I didn't know it at the time. I just did it, and I knew it felt good, and it was good for the babies, and you know. But apparently, a lot of oxytocin is generated as the baby nurses.
Right, and then also remember that the baby, the breast milk, is right. These hormones are in our bloodstream. So when we're full of oxytocin and our baby is nursing, not only are they in our energy field, not only are we holding them and touching them, they are literally getting some doses of oxytocin from the breast milk. Isn't that a brilliant system?
It is a brilliant system, and I have read that there is more oxytocin in breast milk, and it helps the mother and the baby bond.
And be calm and happy and loving and all of the things we need to be if we're going to raise our children without strangling them, because, you know, kind of a pain in the ass a lot, right?
Yes, indeed. Well, the Progressive Radio Network likes for me to stop a few minutes before the top of the hour. So we'll do that. But I really encourage people, and I'll put it when I write up the show, and it'll be on the archived. But people need to go IntimateArtsCenter.com, and I'll put that on. So there you will learn how to become an erotic virtuoso, and we've been discussing that today with Sherry Winston and Carl Frankel. You are just so brilliant and informed, and so people going to this workshop will learn 5 secret tools that you'll be able to put to use immediately to get and give more pleasure, and for partners, revive sizzle and skills for sustaining the sparks. I love how you put that. And for singles, better relationship with your own sexuality and erotic power. So for any of you who are on the east side of the United States.
We already have people flying in from far away, by the way. So
I bet you do. And I was just about to add that because I'm sure this could be life transforming.
You know,
workshop.
And I also want to invite people, particularly if they're listening to the archive version and this has already happened, come to our website. We've got free ebooks and we've got our books and there's tons of articles and blogs and things to read and just, you know, there's a lot of content on our website. So come visit us at IntimateArtsCenter.com and there's so much there for you.
Thank you, Sherry. Thank you, Carl. There is so much there for you. You've given us so much on this program today. Thank you. Great show to open the new year with. All right. Talk to you soon. Goodbye, everybody. Happy feet.